You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Now I'm joined by Sarah Illingworth from a new duo, Body of Work. We're going to be talking about the new single, Bottle to Go. How are we doing this morning, Sarah?
G'day, Zach. How are you?
I'm doing pretty chill, man. It's like, it's sunny, but also cloudy and a little bit cold here in Otipoti, Dunedin. What are things like up in Tamaki?
Pretty similar, yeah. We've been getting a little bit of everything the last few days. I got completely soaked trying to go for a walk on a lunch break yesterday.
Oh, so no.
I came back in and I had a towel hanging up next to my desk and my jacket was over on the coat hanger and everyone was like, "Do you live here now?"
Crack up. Well, you are currently in the office at the moment, correct?
I am, yeah.
Awesome, yeah. Awesome. What's the vibe in the office today?
That's pretty good. Everything so far so good. Pretty smooth. Mm. Everyone's like circling around their desks and starting to get into it.
Nice. People aren't watching Netflix or anything, not doing things they shouldn't.
Not as far as I can tell, no.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's get into the yarn. The lyrics for these tracks from your upcoming EP, Secondhand Blues, under the name Body of Work. Mm-hmm. You've been sitting on the lyrics for these tracks since 2019, and they've finally been translated into music. How does it feel to have the first one, which is Bottle to Go, out in the world?
It feels good. Yeah, I was a lot more excited on Friday when we released the song than I expected to be. Mm-hmm. And I guess it has been a long time. Long time in the works, and I kind of was like, "Will it just feel really anticlimactic?" But it kind of felt like my birthday or something. I was like, "Yay, finally!" So it does feel really good, and there's been, you know, so many different. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? It's just like another little pop song to feed to the internet, but there's been so many different chapters.
Don't put yourself down like that, mate.
Well, you know, there's that aspect to it. And you know, like I work in music and I work around people who do it professionally and have been for a long time and who are a lot better at it than I, you know, who are professionals, you know. Part of me is like, just going method, trying to really get on the level and understand all the hard mahi that has to go into something like that. And, you know, it's a lot.
You've got some pretty cool names here. You've got Shannon Fowler, who performed and entirely produced the song. You've got Julian Dine playing drums on all three of these new songs, and Jeremy Toy mastering them. What was the process like of having them make it into music? Did you have to rework the lyrics at all?
No, the lyrics stayed the same. So the song started, a friend, Dan B. Hill, who also goes by DBH, in Manchester, had basically like, I mean, he plays all sorts of instruments and types of music and had never really tried to produce, make beats or anything like that on his computer. So he had a crack at that and then asked me to write some lyrics for some stuff that he'd made. Which I was all in for, and that's how this whole damn thing started. But then, I had been living over in Manchester and then came back at the start of COVID, kind of not really knowing what was, it was when the borders were closing and stuff, and I was supposed to come back for a visit, and ended up moving back properly. Mm-hmm. And then in that time, started working with friends here to kind of think about how we could like bring the songs to life in a live way. My brain hasn't crossed that line yet. But just with live instrumentation. And so initially a friend, Cam Ballantyne, who's a composer here, generously like helped me re-record the vocals, and kind of that was really helpful because that gave me something to sort of practice to and listen to until such a time as I could work with someone to kind of build the tracks properly. And then I met Shannon through work. I was working at a record store, but he has a studio in the same building, And then he had his Tom Lark album due for release last year. And I ended up doing, I had been doing music publicity and stuff. So we did a trade, basically. And he, I did the PR for Brave Star. And he basically rebuilt, the songs that I'd been working on with Dan from scratch. And it was quite, like, initially I thought it would be like, he'd work out the arrangements and then would get other people to play on the songs and stuff. But there was a point where I was just like kind of watching him play everything into his DAW and I was like, oh, he's just kind of done it. And I was like, and he'd like programmed the drums. But we'd always talked about getting someone to like definitely to do those live. And I was like, Julian asked me to do a favor for him, so maybe I could do another track.
Yeah. You scratch my back, I make your music.
Yeah, or it was just like helping him with the wording of something. So I got very lucky. And then I just sort of realized that between the different people that I was working with, I might be able to fluke my way into something that sounded half decent.
That sounds great. Sounds awesome. Is there any kind of plan for you and Dan to play together live?
Not at the moment. I'd love to do that at some point. Yeah, he's in Manchester. A place called Pod.
Oh, no,
he's,
sorry.
Yeah. He's living in a village just outside of Manchester, which I have a lot of friends there, and I'd been planning to move there myself if I'd stayed. And I'm going back next week for a visit, and that's the first time I've been to the UK since coming back. So I'll see him then, and I'll see if I can talk him into it.
You should. That'd be really special. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. I assume that because you've got a Masters of Science in Poverty and Development from the University of Manchester's Global Development Institute, I assume that you met Dan either through your studies, or do you guys just happen to be in the same circles?
Yeah, just the crew, my buddies over there are all kind of music people. I got really, like, it took a couple of years to sort of make proper friends and stuff. But I've got a really great group of friends over there now, and Dan's one of those people.
The first verse of the song mentions drinking alone, and then the next line is talking about drinking alone. The next line is Saturday in Los Feliz. Were you drinking alone in Los Feliz, and why is that place special to you?
Oh, good question. I have drunk alone in Los Feliz. You're saying it correctly. I was a little bit nervous. I was like, oh, I like saying it Los Feliz in the song.
Is that
bad? I was like, should I run it past, you know, like, anyway, like, yeah, skipping on beyond that. It's kind of, I've spent time there, and it's just, it holds a special little place in my heart. Not because I lived there or anything, but have been there at different chapters and points in my life. And it just kind of, felt correct to throw that reference in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Throw a little callback to Los Feliz.
Yeah. There is actually, there's a piano bar in there in Los Feliz called the Dresden, which is somewhere that I've been to, and it's if you go to LA, it's definitely worth checking out. It's quite a wacky little spot.
A piano bar, so I just assume people are playing piano or something.
Actually, Lisa Crawley, who is another New Zealand artist, is, I don't know if she's still doing a residency there, but she did have a residency for a while.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah, if I ever do go to LA, we'll see. Hopefully, after the election, the US is still intact. We'll have to find out.
Fingers fucking crossed.
Fingers crossed. You're also a former music journalist. I want to know, what are some of your highlights from doing that gig? And what was the impetus for pivoting from that to being in communications and writing?
I did music writing for a long time. I did a lot for Rip It Up and Back to Basics magazine. I was proofreading both of those while living in New York through my 20s, or, you know, for a chunk of that time, and then doing writing for other publications as it came up. And then I was in New York at the time of Occupy Wall Street. Mm. And that really kind of just sort of opened the can on some stuff that I've been thinking about, you know, just sort of like wrestling with internally for a while, and didn't really have the language to, have the depth of understanding to be able to kind of do the stuff that I wanted in response to that, you know, including in terms of writing. And it kind of, it just was a bit of a nudge to go back to study, basically. And I had been in a relationship that ended, and I stayed in New York for a little bit longer and then came back to New Zealand. And I started, I'd initially just intended to do a couple of politics papers or something like that. And I ended up realizing that development studies was a thing, international development, you know, or a pathway that I could take. And so, yeah, I started postgrad here in Auckland, and then ended up going to Manchester to do my master's. Mm. Yeah. And then it was through that that I, once I completed that, the department that I studied under, there was a paternity leave cover that came up, and communications, and that's how I started doing comms. So, yeah. And then ended up doing it for a few universities over there.
Awesome. That's an awesome story, yeah. Man. That's real cool.
I imagine... But I've always continued to do music related stuff, and since coming back to New Zealand, like, I had been like, I'm never working in music again, and then since being back, it's all I've done.
Nice.
Yeah,
I imagine being in New York at the time of Occupy Wall Street. I've seen videos of it back then. It would have been a hectic time. Man.
Yeah, it was a pretty interesting time to be there. And yeah, and I think, you know, it sort of got dismissed a little bit as just like not having teeth, or just kind of like people protesting and what's actually going to come of that.
Yeah.
But I just sort of, even for me, you know, like I feel like you may not see the outcomes of something like that in an immediate sense, and we are so used to wanting that instant gratification, or that instant kind of like confirmation that something's had an impact in this like current world of social media and all the rest of it. But it planted a seed for me, and it's like I haven't ended up, you know, doing anything directly related to that movement, but it had an impact on me, and I know it's affected the course of other people's trajectories as well. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting time.
It's probably also affected the trajectory of the Democrats' politics. I mean, Bernie Sanders was very, very popular in 2016, and that was, maybe 5 or 6 years after the protest that it had officially just kind of stopped. I think it had a really big impact on the American psyche, political psyche, in very multifaceted ways. You got kind of the right wing people who went more in the populist Trump route, and then the more left wing people who were more pro Bernie. Yeah,
totally. And it's like, and you know, here we still are.
Same problems. They haven't changed. Anyway, politics aside, I'm curious to know when is the release date for the next single, and will you have any shows planned in Aotearoa in the future, this year?
Ooh, not this year. Like I alluded to before, that's a whole nother ball game. And I'm going to have to find some. I mean, I'm 41, and I'm not sure that anyone needs to witness me learn how to perform at this ripe age. But it does seem like the logical next step.
yeah, it should be. It'd be awesome, man. It'd be awesome.
But I reckon I could talk Shannon. I shouldn't say that. I've got to think about how I approach it. I might have just screwed myself and be like, no. when I was living in Manchester, I had planned to like just go to random open mics in parts of the country that I just definitely didn't know anyone, to sort of work out how to be in front of people. and now I'm back in New Zealand, and it's a lot harder to not run into people you know.
Yeah.
So I haven't worked out how I'm going to deal with that one, but yeah, it's in my brain.
What you could do is go to somewhere really isolated like Greymouth or Westport and start in like small pubs or like country halls and then work your way up to say like Whammy Bar or Power Station or wherever.
Yeah, yeah. The regions.
Kick off the regions.
I'm going to the regions.
Yeah.
And then the next single is I haven't 100% pinned the date, but it will be when I get back from Manchester, so towards the end of September.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and that one's actually, it kind of wasn't really planned that way, but it's kind of like on theme for being able to go back to Manchester and see friends and stuff over there. It's called Home, and it's about kind of feeling pulled between places and and the reasons that you come and go and trying to work out how to feel settled within that.
Awesome. I look forward to hearing that when it comes out at the end of September. Thank you very much for coming on the show today, Sarah. It's been lovely chatting with you.
Thanks so much,
Dad. Of course.
Great to meet you.
Ka kite. That was Sarah Ellingworth of Body of Work talking about the new single, which is Bottle to Go, from their upcoming EP, which is, of course, titled Secondhand Blues. There we go. I did have it on my memory. I wasn't looking at my phone. It's 10:19 here on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show, brought to you by the lovely folks at Edu. I say we hear Body of Work, Bottle to Go, on the one, Edu Breakfast. Love y'all. See y'all soon.
Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.